Parshas Shemot. As you can hear in the hall, only just a few moments ago, asked me, oh, why didn't you cancel the show? I'm not sure if it was out of concern or out of hope. But, of all the parishes in the Torah, to cancel a shiur because you can't speak properly, Parshas Shemot, the way it's written, the way Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Mani Arel Sultan," because it's not the week. I remember Ron Perth from Rabbi Beryl White, in his unique sense of humor. Our first leader, Moshe Rabbeinu, as he himself says, was unable to speak, which is a tradition which has remained with rabbis until this very day. So we'll try our best to say that, sir. If you have a chumash open in front of you, you'll appreciate it. If you don't, you won't. If you have a look towards the beginning of the parasha, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Zayin. On the words, Ubenei Yisrael, Poru Vayishrutu, Vayirbu, Vayatsmu Bemoid Moid. There was a phenomenal population explosion in Klal Yisrael. Chazal said they had 6 in one shot. According to a medrash, they had 60 in one shot. Enormous explosion in the population of Klal Yisrael. Now, we know that even though there was this phenomenal increase in the numbers of the members of Klal Yisrael, but most of them didn't get out. As we know from Parshas Beshalach, on the word V'chamushim Olu, Rashi quotes the Medrash and says that only 1/5 got out. 4/5 remained behind in Mitzrayim. They died when? During the Makkah of Choshech. We know there was this huge population explosion, that's true. But most of them, 4/5, remained behind. About 8 years ago or so, it occurred to me, and today, Kodesh Baruch Hu sent me a string of gifts. And that's why you have to look in the Chumash. We know that on all the words in the Torah, we have the neginos, the cantillation. Come to many, halacha l'moishim m'sinai, artificially made up, halacha l'moishim m'sinai. All of the ta'amim, all of the neginos have names. Look at the words Ubenei Yisrael. Not sure if we have any Balei Kaira in the house. Ubenei Yisrael is called a Munach Revi. Under the word Bnei is a Munach. Yisrael, like a diamond shape, is Munach Revi. What translation of the words Munach Revi? 4 remained. That's what it's hinting to. Ubenei Yisrael. There was an enormous increase in the amount of Klal Yisrael. Paru vayishrutu vayirbu. But Munach Ravi, 4 halakim, 4 out of 5 were Munach. They were placed there, they never left. Just this morning, not sure why, because Baruch Hu planted this in my mind, it occurred to me, let's have a look at the first time that Moshe Rabbeinu is told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he's going to take Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. Turn to Perek Gimel, Pasuk Ches. We know their first meeting is at the burning bush. So Kodesh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu in Pasuk Zayin, I've seen my nation suffering. And then what does it say in Pasuk Ches? Va'eiroi la'atziloi. And I will descend to save them, Miyad Mitzrayim. I will take them out of Mitzrayim. What are the neginos under the word Miyad Mitzrayim? Again, Munach Revi. Kodesh Baruch Hu is hinting, yes, I will take them out, but not all. Munach Revi, 4/5 will remain. Okay, then I thought, let's check, when was the first time that Klal Yisrael are told that they're going to leave Mitzrayim? So you turn to Parshas Vayera, Perek Vav, Pasuk Vav. Kadosh Baruch Hu instructs Moshe towards the beginning of Vayera, Vav, Vav. Says there, Lochein, therefore, Emor Levnei Yisrael Ani Hashem. Tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I am Hashem. And then what should I tell them? Vayseisi Eschem, I'm going to take them out. What did he know? Munach Ravi. I'm going to take them out, but not all. Four-fifths will remain. Munach Ravi. And then it just, it was too good to be true. When did these four-fifths die? In Makas Chesha. Why Dafka Chesha? Why not in Makas Dever? So the Mitzrayim wouldn't see. I thought, let's check out the passage where it says the Mitzrayim didn't see. In Perek, in Pasha's boy, Perek Yud, Pasuk Chav Gimel. Perek Yud, Pasuk Chav Gimel, it says, Loi ra'u ish et achiv. Loi ra'u ish et achiv. Makas Choshech, Perek Yud, Pasuk Chav Gimel. The last Pasuk before Shlishi. Says there, Loi ra'u ish et achiv. No Egyptian saw their brother. What are the time in there? Ish et achiv munach ravi. Because exactly at that time when they couldn't see each other, the Mitzrayim, that's when munach ravi, that's when four-fifths were left behind in Mitzrayim. That was today's gift, which I thought I'd share with you. I shared with a number of Bani Kairi today. And oh, you see, Halacha Moshe, you see now it's amazing. There's a lot of emes in the timing. Okay, if you have your chumashim open anyway, if you turn to Perek Beis Pasuk Chof Aleph, Moshe Rabbeinu saves the Mesiras Nefesh, the daughters of Yisrael, and then it says in Pasuk Chof Aleph, Vayoyel Moshe Loshevet Etoish. How do you translate the word Vayoyel? The Targum has one explanation. Rashi quotes another explanation. It comes from the Medrash, it's the Gemara in the Dorim. Vayoyel is from the word Ola. Ola is an oath. Moshe Rabbeinu swore, he took an oath to Yisrael, that he would not leave Midian without his permission. So Vayoyel from the word Allah is hinting to the fact that he undertook an oath. There is, however, a staggering medrash. Absolutely staggering medrash. The medrash says, yes indeed, Vayoyel comes from the word oath. Moshe Rabbeinu undertook an oath. What was the oath? Not as Rashi suggests, that I'm going to stay in Midian until you let me go. Rather, the Medrash says the following. Yisrael says to Moshe Rabbeinu, I understand you'd like my daughter's hand in marriage. You want to marry my daughter? Yes, says Moshe Rabbeinu. Says Yisrael, on condition that you agree that the first son born from this union will go to Avodah Zarah. And if that's not staggering enough, what's even more surprising is Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, I accept. Says Yisrael, I want you to undertake an oath to that effect. So he undertook an oath. Says the Medrash, that's what it means, Vayoyel, Allah, which was the oath? This was the oath. But Yisrael said, the first son must go to Avodah Zarah. Yisrael said, Mikan ve'eilech, from then onwards, Hashem Shomayim. So the first one has to go be dedicated to the services of Avodah Zarah. Moshe Rabbeinu took an oath to that effect, and that is the oath that's being hinted to in the word Vayoyel. Now, the Medrash actually concludes and says, as a result of this oath, what happens at the end of the parasha? Moshe Rabbeinu was almost killed until Tzipora comes and rescues the day. The Medrash says, that's why. Because he undertook this oath. even more amazing is, we would think, and we'll see in a moment, whatever Moshe Rabbeinu's intention was, clearly he had no plans, obviously, in sending his son to Avodah Zarah. Say the Mefarshim, the Chizkuni, and the Rablaz, and others, Baraturim, at the end of the day, it was fulfilled. It was fulfilled. Because if you look in the Navi in Sefer Shoftim, it talks about Yehoshaphat, Ben Gershon, Ben Manasseh, who served Avodah Zarah. Say the Mefarshim, do you know who that was? Who's Gershon? Gershon was Moshe Rabbeinu's son. So we would say, but it can't be him because it says Yonasan, Ben Gershon, it doesn't say Ben Moshe, it says Ben Manasseh. The Mefarshim says, no, it's Gershon Ben Moshe. The Navi added the extra nun to change the name out of dignity, out of respect for Moshe Rabbeinu. But really, who was this? This was Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson. It was Yonasan, Ben Gershon, Ben Moshe. The way it's written is to conceal it, as it were, Ben Manasseh, but really it was Ben Moshe. So whatever the intention was, it was fulfilled. To respect, it wasn't his son, it was his grandson.
What is this?
What
is this?
It's a pasuk in Sefer Shoftim. It's a pasuk in Sefer Shoftim, Perek Yud Ches, pasuk Lamed, 18:30. So the obvious question is, of course, and it's bothered by all the Mefarshim, firstly, why did Yisrael stipulate this in the first place? And secondly, why did Moshe Rabbeinu agree?
Why did Moshe ask permission to live with him? Is that what the oath?
So there seems to be a divided opinion on what was the oath. Either the oath was he wasn't going to leave Midian, but according to this Medrash, that was never the oath at all.
Then why, then, of course that's it. Why would Moshe Rabbeinu go to Israel to ask him, yes, may I leave? Hashem told me to go, can I go? I'm the courage.
According to Rashi's chat.
According
to the second chat, right.
Why was he asking?
Yeah, in a so according to the second chat, he wasn't obligated, maybe, I said, common courtesy, whatever it was, but he wasn't obligated to it. That wasn't the shvuah that he undertook. That's the big question. Mm-hmm. Yisroi had just given up Avodah Zarah. Not only had he given up Avodah Zarah, he was public enemy number one. That's why his daughters were out getting the water in the first place. Moshe Rabbeinu had to rescue them. Why was he sending his young girls to fetch the water? He was in Cheirim. They rejected him. In Cheirim, you were the big priest and now you've turned your back on us. He couldn't be seen in public. He was Moshe Nefesh. Now all of a sudden, he wants his own grandson to go to Avodah Zarah. Make any sense? So there are a number of approaches. Really what I want to focus on tonight, because it's very, very important to say, is the approach of Reb Chaim Shmulevitz in his Sefer Sichas Musa. But just briefly, the Baal HaTurim explains, I'll be very honest with you, I don't really understand. If somebody can explain this to me, I'll be very happy. The Baal HaTurim explains, he doesn't explain why Yisroel wanted to make this condition. He's there to explain why did Moshe Rabbeinu acquiesce. The Baal HaTurim says, we can be rest assured, Moshe Rabbeinu had no intention whatsoever of allowing his firstborn to serve Avodah Zarah. The reason why he agreed to it was because he was hoping by agreeing he'd be able to be machzir Yisroel b'tshuva. And obviously once Yisroel would come around completely, Yisroel would waive the whole condition. There's the Baal HaTurim, and indeed he was successful because Yisroel was Megayer, he converted. So on one hand he was successful because he got Yisroel to convert. On the other hand, he had very bad ramifications for himself, as the Baal HaTurim himself says, because his own grandson did end up serving Avodah Zarah. Now I must be honest, I don't fully understand the Baal HaTurim, because as we know, we have no agenda to make converts in Klal Yisrael. If somebody is Jewish and he machzir them b'tshuva, of course that's a wonderful thing. But to make geirim, to the contrary, we try and put them off, we dissuade them, as we learned from Ruth and Naomi. So So I'm not sure exactly what the Banaturi means when he says that the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu agreed was to try and get him to be machzir l'mutam. He was successful because he got him to convert. Why is that considered success? We're not really interested in people converting. I'm not 100% sure. The Radvan, in a lengthy tshuva, explains differently. Very fascinating. He says, Yisroi messed it all up. He messed up the whole condition. If you look at the Medrash, the wording of the condition is as follows. He says to Moshe Rabbeinu, the first son should go for Avodah Zarah. Mikan ve'elech l'shem shamayim. How do you translate the words Mikan ve'elech?
From here on.
What he really should have said was from there on. Misham ve'elech. That means your first son should go for Avodah Zarah. From then on, second, third and fourth can be l'shem shamayim. But he messed up the whole condition. When he said from here on, what do you mean from here? What, from today? Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't yet married and had no children. Right. Moshe Rabbeinu said, fine, so I agree. Fine. From here on, Hashem Shemayim. It is, from here on. From today and onwards, I'll be Hashem Shemayim. And that's why all his children are happy for him to be Hashem Shemayim. Again, Rav does point out, he hadn't really squirmed out of it completely. At the end of the day, Yisroi thought that, that Moshe Rabbeinu had accepted terms and conditions, and that's why his grandson was over Avodah Zarah. There are other explanations. What I'd really like to focus on for a few minutes is the approach of Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz asks a question I can't understand. Yisro was Maisa Nefesh. He saw the light. It all made sense. He rejected everything. Everything was tried and tested. And he came around and he understood that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Echad Yochid Umayuchad. And all of a sudden he turns around and says, I want my grandson to have a desire. It makes no sense. So he says a very important explanation, but I think there's an equally important addition that we have to make. The title of this piece of the Shmuz that Reb Chaim Shmulevitz discusses is called Eved Hashem. Eved Hashem. In fact, if you look in his sefer, he has a number of pieces entitled Eved Hashem. Three in total. What is the simplest definition, says Reb Chaim, of an Eved Hashem? Somebody who learns the Torah a lot? No. Somebody who became all the mitzvahs? No. Says Reb Chaim, the simplest and truest definition of an Eved Hashem, it's somebody who serves Hashem without making any calculations of whether it does or doesn't make sense. What is an Eved? The master who tells the slave, I want you to clean this floor. He looks at the floor, doesn't make any sense. It's clean already. He doesn't ask questions. This is what my master asks, this is what I do. I don't obey my master if and when it makes sense to me and when it's convenient to me and when I have time and when it's worthwhile. Then you're not really an Eved to your master. He's not the boss, you're your own boss. That's not an Eved. An Eved is, this is the instruction of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I do it on his terms. Does make sense, doesn't make sense, worthwhile, not worthwhile, do have time, don't have time, it doesn't make a difference. The most classic example of this, and he quotes it, is the story that is told in the Gemara. The Gemara tells us in Brachas that the Melech, Chizkiyahu HaMelech, was dying. On his deathbed, dying. The Navi comes to meet him, Yishayahu, and tells him, Chizkiyahu HaMelech, you're a dead man. And I'll tell you why, he says. Why haven't you married? At that time he was unmarried. Why haven't you married? You're a mitzvah to get married. So he says, no, because I see the Ruach HaKodesh, that who's my son going to be? Menashe. Terrible Eved Avodah Zarah. It's true, Chazal say, by the way, that eventually Menashe, at the end of his life, was Chayzeh B'Tshuva, but the damage had been done. Avodah Zarah was rampant in Klal Yisrael because of Menashe. What, a son like that? That's why I decided not to get married. says Yishayahu the famous words, "Bahadikavshi derachmana lomalach." Why are you making HaKadosh Baruch Hu's calculations? You have a mitzvah to get married and have children, that's your mitzvah. It is worthwhile, it's not worthwhile, my child is going to be an Oyved Avodah Zarah anyway, that's not your business. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's calculation. You have a mitzvah. I remember in school, you'll remember the English contingent for sure, Dr. Gerber, Rabbi Yosef Gerber, Gilan is in Yerushalayim. He was one of the rabbeim in our school, Hasmonean. So he had many famous lines, but one of them was, he once told one of the boys in his class, "I'd like you to do the following, A, B, and C." So this boy turns around and says, "Why do I have to do it? Why must I do it?" So on the spot, Dr. Gerber said to him, "Why do you have to do it? 9 reasons why you have to do it. 9 reasons. First reason," he says, "because I said so." He says, "After that, the other 8 don't matter anymore." That would be his story. The first reason, because I told you. After that, the other reasons don't make no difference. That's the story over here. Why do we listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Because we're in Eved Hashem. After that, doesn't make any difference. Yitzroy came around to his emunah not by being forced to do so. It made sense to him. I tried A, I tried B, I tried C, I tried everything. Process of elimination is the last one standing is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Melech Malchei Amlochim. So his emunah was entirely based on logic. It makes sense to me. Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, tremendous Chiddush. Of course he wanted his grandchildren also to be ma'aminim, but he wanted them to come round in the same way as he came round. He didn't want them to be forced into being Oyved Hashem. Let him be an Oyved Avodah Zarah. If he rejects Avodah Zarah and then becomes an Eved Hashem, wonderful, that's what I would love him to do. But I want him to come about, I want him to come round in the same way as I did, meaning based on logic. Now obviously, this doesn't quite explain, for example, why then did he only insist that the first son should be Avodah Zarah? He should have insisted that all of his grandchildren. But either way, that's Rav Chaim Shmulevitz to so. And he explains. He says, if you're forced into doing whatever it may be, religious or otherwise, you're playing a very dangerous line. We all know, if we want our children to go to bed at 8 o'clock, the last thing is to tell them, you must go to bed at 8 o'clock. If you tell them, I don't want you to go to bed at 8 o'clock, rest assured they'll go to bed at 8 o'clock. That's a child. We all have an element of a child in us. We don't like to be dictated to. So if we are a mukhrach, if we're forced, what's our natural tendency? We want to rebel against authority. Nobody's going to tell me, I must do A, B, or C. Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, a very famous piece in Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, phenomenal pshat. He says, how do we understand the following story? The story is, in the Navi, David HaMelech, for whatever reason, beyond the scope of today's shiur, is cursed by Shimi ben Gera, a terrible, terrible curse. Klala nimetzes. For reasons also beyond the scope of today's shiur, David HaMelech doesn't punish him. David HaMelech is on his deathbed, and he calls his son Shlomo HaMelech. He's about to be coronated as the successor to the throne. And he says to his son Shlomo, listen to me. You know full well that Shimi ben Gera cursed him, terrible curse. He says to him, I want you with your great chokhmah, I want you to take care of Shimi ben Gera. He doesn't say to him straight out, go and kill him. He says, I know ish chacham asa. You're a wise person, I want you to take care of him. Later on, Sefer Melachim, Shlomo HaMelech summons Shimi ben Gera. And he says to him, I want you to build a home in Yerushalayim. Okay. And you must never step foot out of Yerushalayim. On the day that you leave Yerushalayim, Yodoya Teda, you must know, Mois, Thomas, you're a dead man. Okay. That wasn't enough. He said to him, I want you to take an oath to that effect. Take a shavua that you're never going to leave Yerushalayim until the end of your life. If you step foot out of Yerushalayim, it's all over. 3 years later, the Pesukim describe, message comes to Shlomo HaMelech that Shimon ben Gera left Yerushalayim. Shlomo HaMelech summons him and he says, Haloi hishbaticho, you took an oath, you're not going to leave Yerushalayim. And I told you quite clearly, the day that you leave Yerushalayim, you're going to be killed. And indeed, he was put to death. Says Rechaim Shalavit, one moment. Shlomo HaMelech obviously wants Shimon ben Gera put to death. That was the whole plan. You have to find a pretext to do so. So we've got this whole mechanism, don't step foot out of Yerushalayim. Why in a million years would you make Shimi ben Gera take an oath not to leave Yerushalayim? What's the plan over here? You want Shimi ben Gera to leave Yerushalayim, then you can kill him. So the last thing you should do is have him undertake an oath that he's not going to leave. To the contrary, no strings attached, and they're probably he'll leave. Says Reb Chaim Shulevitz, that was Chochma Shlomo HaMelech. To the contrary, had he not taken an oath, he might well have stuck there in Yerushalayim. He's telling me to take an oath, I won't be dictated to. Shlomo HaMelech knew that. It was only a question of time. He will surely leave Yerushalayim, and indeed he did. You know, they used to tell this joke. Excuse me. Very often in a joke, there's a lot of musaf. There's a lot of musaf. Remember my brother, Master, once told this joke at Sheva Brachos. But you know the story. A tall fellow driving down the street, his brand new Cadillac, $100,000 brand spanking new. All of a sudden, he stops in the street. Two highwaymen, they drag him out of the car at gunpoint. If you listen over here, for fun, just for fun, we're going to break your car to smithereens. They took a piece of chalk, they drew a circle in the street, and they said, you stand in that circle, don't you dare step foot out of that circle, don't you dare. Obediently he steps foot, stands in the circle, and they took a hammer and bricks, and they just start smashing the window and the bonnet and the windscreen. They turn around, they look at this fellow, he's laughing his head off. They don't quite get the joke over here. Fine, I'm sure gonna, they complete the job, and by the time they're done, the car is just shattered glass, twisted metal, no resemblance to a car. They turn around, this fellow is laughing and laughing as ever. They say, we've just broken your car, $100,000, what's so funny? He says, it's true, but when you weren't looking, I stepped foot out of the circle twice. There's a lot of Muslim in that. There's a lot of musta in that. You know, I had the last laugh. We broke your car. You told me I have to stay in the circle and I stepped foot out. I stepped foot out. I won't be dictated to. So Chaim Shmulevitz explains that this is where Yisroel was coming from. Yisroel didn't want his children to be dictated to. He didn't want his children to have to be Oizei Hashem. He wanted them to make that conscious decision in the same way that he did. Not that he wanted his children to be Oveda Avodah Zarah, be rest assured. Nothing could be further from the truth. But he didn't want to be forced into it. And that's why he said, let them be Oveda Avodah Zarah. Now, I don't think we can leave Reb Chaim Shmulevitz as it is. I think there's a very, very important addition that one has to make. One mustn't, chas v'shalom, make a mistake. One mustn't make a mistake. You'll read this piece in Rechaim Shalevitz. What will you say? Yisroel, democracy, you want to go Avodah Zarah? Fine with me. Torah, fine with me. So what's Yisroel's big mistake? You've got to be Eved Hashem. It's got to be false. That's not what Rechaim Shalevitz means. That's not what Rechaim Shalevitz means. Any parent, any Rebbe, any friend knows the worst way to influence anybody is by forcing them to do it. Whether it's to stay in Yerushalayim or to stand in a circle, it makes no difference. That's not what Reb Chaim Shulevitz means. Obviously, as parents, as rebbeim, as people who have influence over others, Derochero Darche Noyam. It must be explained in the most pleasant way. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz is talking about the result, not the methodology. The result of our chinuch has to be that a person feels that now I'm a true Eved Hashem, and I'm a Kayan Mitzvah on a Kadosh Baruch Hu's terms, not on my terms. But not that Reb Chaim Shmulevitz means Chas V'Shalom ram it down their throats, force them. In other words, Yisroel's tactics were not altogether wrong. Of course, this is not our derech. We don't give our children options. You know, if you want Avodah Zarah, that's great. If you want Torah, that's also fine. No, that was obviously too extreme. But the Yisroel's HaDavah, not to be forced, of course we identify. What Reb Chaim Shmulevitz is talking about is the result. We, as an Eved Hashem, having been well educated and well taught, now feel that I'm a true Eved Hashem. When things do make sense, don't make sense, on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's terms, not on my terms. I once heard, there was a Mashkiach in Yerushalayim, who I know, his name is Rabbi Yonatan Eber. He's a son-in-law of the Dov Yaffa, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who just passed away a year or two ago. I once heard a shmooze from him, and he said the following. He said he, as a young, married Avrich, used to daven in a particular shul. In front of him was a father with two young sons, 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old. And he said he noted with interest and pain the way this father was mechanech his children with regard to tefillah. If they would dare just turn their face out of the siddur, they got a rebuke. They didn't even think of leaving their place, they would get a slap. Rigid. And indeed, of course, they were there from the beginning to the end of davening, not moving their nose out the siddur. He said he watched this, stood behind him for years. 10 years later, Reb Eber becomes a mashkiach in the yeshiva ketana, his first position. And would you believe it, these two young boys, who are now not that young, are there in this yeshiva. So he said, as an experiment, I was curious to see, how do these boys daven? After years of chinuch like that, how do they daven? And he said this in the shmooze, and it was very powerful. I looked at them, and I watched them day after day after day. These two bochrim, unlike any other bochrim in yeshiva, didn't daven a word. Didn't daven a word. That a negative association. You're going to ram tefillah down my throat. So for all the years the father thought he was a successful machanach, what he didn't realize was he was the most unsuccessful machanach you could possibly be. You force chinuch down a child's throat, you can be rest assured one thing, that kid will never daven. That's what he thought. He said in the same shmooze, they once did a survey. They once did, apparently, in a famous survey, they interviewed thousands upon thousands of people in Russia who had been through 25 years of basically slave labor in the communist army, the army of the Tsar. And they noticed a phenomenal thing. A huge percentage of them were total social outcasts, dropouts from society, had no Seder Hayoim, had no morning or afternoon or evening, alcoholics, drug addicts, their house were total wrecks. And the explanation was, because for 25 years, they had it forced, rammed down their throat. You have to be here at 5, and you have to be there at 6, and your shoes have to be polished like a mirror. So, consciously or subconsciously, there festers a feeling of, when I get out of this place, nobody will tell me I have to be clean, and nobody will tell me I have to get up in the morning, and nobody will tell me where I have to be and what I have to be. Therefore, these people had wrecks of a life because they had it forced down them. He said one thing, and we'll finish with this. He said, do you know, have you ever been to a circus? And you see, they'll take a whole bunch of mice, and they'll play music, and the mice start jumping up and down, dancing. How do they do it? How do they train these mice? He said, it's very cruel. You know how they do it? They put these mice in a cage. The bottom of the cage is a heating element, and they begin turning up the heat. And as the heat turned up, the mouse, of course, don't want to sit there, so they jump up and down to try and not stay on the same spot. All the while, there's music playing. And they do this repeatedly. And eventually, there's an association such that when they switch off the heat, but they play the music, the mouse starts jumping up and down. That's their association that they make with this music, and that's how they train these mice. So he explained that if you force a child to daven, and every time he takes his nose out to sit up, he's given a slap, what's the association that he makes? Davening equals pain. That's what it is. Davening is just one negative experience that I had to suffer through for years and years and years. It ran down my throat. So the minute I'm out of my father's clutches, I'm in Yeshiva Ketana, I never open a sin, I don't daven work. That's the huge danger of ramming chinuch down a child's throat, a Talmud throat. As I mentioned, that's not what Rav Chaim Shmulevitz meant. When he talks about being an Eved Hashem, he's not talking about the technique, it's about the result. Obviously, the technique is to show the child, show the Talmud the beauty of Yiddishkeit, the boundaries of Yiddishkeit, but the yofi of living a fulfilled, wholesome life as an Eved Hashem, that eventually this is what you will want to do in life. And the true acid test of success will be, has he become an Eved Hashem? Is he really somebody who's Eved HaKadosh Baruch Hu in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's terms? Or, when it's convenient, and when it's logical, and when it makes sense. That really is the underlying theme. As we mentioned, there are many ideas to explain it, very puzzling medrash, why Yitzhak would want his grandchildren to be Eved HaVeda Zara. But at least in the opinion of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, what Rav Yisro was trying to say was, I don't want him to be forced. Give him options and let him come round. As we explained, Chas v'Shalom, that's too dangerous a game to play, and that's certainly not how derech. But to an extent, you say this is true. You don't force anybody into Yiddishkeit. Certainly not our children, our Talmidim, our friends, whoever it may be, because that's doomed for failure. Tell somebody you have to stand in a circle, he'll step out. Tell Shimon ben Gera, he has to stay in Yerushalayim, he'll leave. Tell these soldiers in an army, for 25 years you've got to get up on time, they'll definitely not get up on time. That's the teva ha'odah. Not to be forced into anything. Show them the yofi, show them the enriched life of a true Eved of Hashem, that's emesika ha'tlocha in chinuch habodin, chinuch ha'ilodin, and chinuch ha'tavim.